Hey guys, Melissa here. I blog at our family website, www.thecorkums.com, which we affectionately call the Corkboard. This is the Uncorked Podcast. If I had to choose a descriptor for our family, it would be outside the box. Whether it's adopting three unrelated adolescents out of birth order, or trying to run a coffee shop in our quote-unquote spare time right after adopting, we love adventure. We had to give up that coffee shop, and our three oldest kids are launched for now. But with lots of extended family living at home and a full-time wellness business, there still aren't many dull moments. We've met so many amazing people with fascinating stories along our journey. I'd love to introduce them to you. Welcome to episode 7. Settle in and pop open your favorite bottle of wine, unless you're driving, of course. My guest this week is Trisha Anderson, another Korean adoptee who also happens to be my best friend from forever and will hopefully be a recurring guest on the podcast. As you'll hear, we're basically the same person, but representing a huge dichotomy in ideology. Over the years, our friendship has been what we think is a beautiful picture of civil discourse and what we hope would become the new norm instead of all the division and lines drawn in the sand. Grab your seatbelt, because we're kind of all over the place in terms of topic and tone, from humorous to serious. It's kind of how we roll. So welcome to this week's edition of the Uncorked Podcast. This is the first live... No, that's not true. This is the first in-person recording that we've ever done. And so it's kind of a big experiment because I've kind of got my phone recording thing down, but the in-person thing. And so we're sharing a microphone because I'm not technologically savvy enough to figure out how to have two microphones.
We're touching knees.
So that we can both be close enough to the microphone.
Proximity matters. Hashtag proximity matters.
Yeah. Okay. So my guest this week is my BFF forever, Trisha.
That was redundant.
It was. I'm sorry.
We're off to a great start.
We are. So when I first wanted to have a podcast, I actually wanted her to be my co-host. But we have too many kids between us and lives that are too busy. And so we knew that it would actually never happen. So instead, I think she's going to be like my refrain in the podcast, like my recurring guest every couple.
Every time I can figure out how to get to your house.
Yeah. She got lost coming to my house.
I've never driven to your house from my house like this in the dark. It was dark. It's really dark at night.
Did you know that? Anyway, the reason why would we need to have a podcast just the two of us?
Because when we talk, we never stop.
That's not true. Okay, maybe that's a little bit true. So we're sitting in my living room with glasses of Ménage à Trois wine.
Uncorked. Get it?
It's the Uncorked Podcast.
I'm so punny.
But anyway, so how long have we been friends?
100 years.
Exactly. I was going to say 102.
How old am I? 34. Gosh. Am I allowed to curse?
I did tell iTunes it was G-rated.
Maybe shouldn't have invited me. For 30 years.
Yeah.
30 years
since. A long time.
What was our first Babes in Toyland?
I don't know. I think we were in a dance recital together.
Right. Babes in Toyland.
And someone introduced us because we were both Korean and adopted.
Which makes us the same. We probably knew each other. Our moms probably knew each other. They were probably BFFs too.
So anyway, the moral of the story is that most people see us as the same person, which
is really funny because...
Right. So the things that are the same are...
Do you think that most people see us as the same person?
How many times did you have to answer to Melissa in high school?
Well, fine. So when we were 16, sure. But like now?
Yeah, but we don't have all the same friends now.
I know.
Like we're not like hanging out in the same place all day long together like in high school. We are both female. We're both Korean. And we're both adopted.
True. True stories. All of them.
All of them. And we were confused our entire growing up years. Like twins. Like we literally could have been twins. I literally could have gone to class for you and people would have not known the difference.
This is a radio show, so you can't see us. A radio show? That's not what they call it. That's not what the kids call it, is it?
No.
This is a what is it, a podcast?
It's a podcast.
So you can't see us, but we don't look alike.
No.
I'll post
a picture on the show notes page.
And you'll be like, those people are not the same person.
So anyway, all that to say, the irony is that we were confused all during our growing up years, like twins, like identical twins.
We did do that game, the Crazy Korean Twins.
Can we not talk about that on public podcasting?
On a live TV radio show?
Yeah.
It's not called a radio show.
But, like, that's pretty much where the similarities end. Oh, and we have kids and we're married. We married the same person.
We did not marry really. The same person. It's so weird.
Okay, so that's not where the similarities end. So let's talk about our twin husbands real quick, and then we'll talk about where the similarities end. So
their DNA is literally the same.
Their
fingerprints are probably the same.
They rhyme.
Identical twins.
Pat and Matt.
Wow.
Both from Connecticut.
Hartford, Connecticut.
And neither one of us are from Connecticut.
Nope, so we're both from Towson.
Managed to marry people from Connecticut.
Hartford, Connecticut.
Both born in November.
Born in November.
And both have degrees in computer science.
Nerds.
Yeah. So that's really where it actually ends. But after that.
No, they both worked at Travelers Insurance.
Right.
Is this too much information for a public forum?
No, I mean.
Both their dads worked at Travelers Insurance. How do you think they got the jobs? And aren't their siblings the same age or something? I don't know. There's a lot of similarities. And they both ice skated.
Hockey.
They both went to private schools in the Hartford area.
Yeah.
They're the same.
Pretty much.
Yep.
So we were the same people in high school and we married the same people in college. But then it stopped. The similarities end there.
I don't think so.
No?
No. Well, I like to think that sometimes I try to be as good a parent as you are.
I think you're a better parent than me these days.
I think you're a way better parent than me, but that's fine.
My husband's in the corner shaking his head that I'm definitely not the
better
parent.
If Matt were here, he'd be shaking his head too.
Because they're the same person.
Right, because they're the same person. Same fingerprints.
So, okay. So those are all the things that are the same. Been friends for forever. So what makes our friendship notable, do you think?
That we rhyme. No. I think, well, I know why you brought me here. So because we are so different philosophically, theologically, politically, religiously, or lack thereof. Does that fall under theologically?
Unless your religion doesn't have God. So yeah, and the moral of the story is...
But we still get along!
We're still friends!
Neat! I still love you!
Yeah, and I love you too.
How about that?
Okay. So one day, we'll have a regular podcast where we get to talk about all the issues between two civilized people on different ends of pretty much every ideological spectrum you can have.
Having a non-hostile dialogue with someone who doesn't share your same belief system.
Right. So now you all can understand why this would be a phenomenal...
That's crazy talk!
I know. It's going to be the best podcast ever. But for now, you'll just be a recurring refrain in the Uncorked stories because you... We're also a huge supporter of my idea to share the stories of everyday extraordinary people because stories help us relate to people who may be different than us.
I agree. That's why I'm in Pantsuit Nation.
That's why you're in what?
Pantsuit Nation. Have you heard of it? It's a Hillary Clinton thing.
Oh.
See?
Yeah, I know.
Opposite sides of the spectrum.
I know. I've never even heard of that.
I am.
Oh, head in the sand.
That's all right. It's fine.
So...
It's something that I like, but you don't have to like it, too.
I know. I might like it.
That's okay.
So we're talking about, I teach a class, a middle school class of homeschool people, and we are learning about fallacies this year. And so we just learned the ad hominem.
I live in an anemone. Anemone. All right, kid. All right. Don't hurt yourself.
I know. H-O-M-I-N-E-M. I can see it and I can spell it. I'm just not sure I can say it. Ad hominem.
I think
attack.
That's close enough.
Close enough. All okay. Right. So, but basically the idea...
You're Korean. It's okay.
I know. My English sucks. The idea that you can attack an idea from a person just because you don't like that person.
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time.
Yeah. Sorry. It's a fallacy. Sorry, bad girl. Logic.
It is bad logic.
So, fortunately, we're coming out of an election cycle that gives us me a lot of teaching material on this topic for the kiddos to understand this idea of ad hominem.
I'm making that emoji face full of teeth right now.
With the, like, the ends of the lips pointed down. Like, not the smiley happy one.
No, not the smiley happy one. Like, the one that's like...
Yeah. What are some of the escapades we've had over the years?
What escapades haven't we had over the years?
It's the shared escapades that keep us so tightly bonded, despite the fact that you're part of a Hillary Clinton something.
Fan group. Fan okay, club. It really is. That's what it is. I mean, it's like...
Anyway. Do they do anything, like, practical?
Yeah, there's lots
functional.
Of... Functional? Yeah, there's lots of calls to action and charities that are supported, and it's a really good... And mostly sharing stories. I mean, that's what the larger, the global purpose of it is. When it started, it's just a little, like, a tiny Facebook group. When I joined it, there were, like, 12,000 people in it, and now there's, like, 3 million something.
Do you ever feel like it's an echo chamber? I don't know.
Yes,
I feel
like of course it is. It I definitely need to get on is.
And hear the stories.
It totally is, and that... But, you know, sometimes that can be comforting, especially for people who are especially vulnerable in their situations, whatever that may be. So it's definitely a safe space. It was. Now that it's so big, it's...
Yes. There,
anything like, that big.
Safe space.
There's a lot of vulnerability. Right. There, you know, you open yourself up.
5 million. It's basically like sharing your idea with the world.
Right. But even so, I mean... I've been impressed with the, even now, I mean, you know, however many months later, it's still generally been a very positive, very safe, very articulate, and yeah, just a good place to go for.
So I just listened to another podcast called Invisibilia. It's an NPR podcast. Mm-hmm. I think you would like it. It's pretty neutral in terms of ideology, but... I was listening to an episode about how computers are shaping our lives and whether what their impacts are. And there was a psychologist that was talking about like the fact that validation, especially from anyone, but now we can get validation in such larger doses through social media is like a drug because it's like psychologically it creates happy chemicals in our brain to be validated.
So, definitely. Especially so for teenagers, the likes, the number of likes on your... You know, your Facebook post or your Instagrams or your tweets. I don't have the Instagram or the Twitter, so I don't know about those. But there's, you know, it's the same thing that like the number of followers you have and how and on the flip side, how negative comments can really, especially for young people, but also for anyone that puts themselves out there on social media, it can really be damaging. We forget that we're not face to face with those people, the commenters and the recipients. Both forget that there's a human on the other side.
Yeah, I feel like there's a whole negative side to social media that I'm managed to stay sheltered from. I know it's really? Out there, but I like don't see it. Like I think my sphere on Instagram and then I don't really get Twitter at all. We've talked about that on this podcast before, but is really like other moms, other homeschooling moms, other adoptive moms. And while there's like some disagreeing of ideas, generally we're just all like liking pictures of each other's kids. Like there's not a whole of like a lot of ideology floating around. It's mm-hmm. kind of just like, here's my life and my cute kids. And so, but I know in my head that there's like a whole like high school, middle school, teen, tween, like side of Instagram mm-hmm. and other social media like Snapchat. I can't even talk about that because I know nothing.
I just know there's like flower crowns and dog faces. That's all I know about Snapchat.
And
I don't
have you like.
I don't have the Snapchats either.
I know, and that you find people using the ghost with the dots. Like people are like, "Here's my Snapchat," and they like give you a picture with like a ghost.
In the dots. Yeah, there's a little ghost. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that is either. I think it's the logo. Anyway. We're old. When I went to school, and I didn't have a Snapchat.
Yeah, but there's like a whole paradigm about social media that's way different than what I experience every day. I have to remember that. I have to remind myself of that frequently.
And I think that the social media algorithms, at least in Facebook, help you keep it that way because they form a profile of you and then they show you things that they think that you would want to see or want to agree with.
Even worse in my case, because I really only sign on to Facebook to look in the groups I'm a part of.
Right. Well, I'm and I don't know about Instagram or Snapchat. Are you on Snapchat, or are you just talking about the ghost?
No, I just know that there's a ghost.
Well, okay. So that's a no. Hard no on that one. So, but on Instagram, so you're like mostly active on Instagram. I don't know about the Instagram algorithms, but I know on Facebook that there are algorithms that create and purposefully, deliberately create an echo chamber. And it really is, it takes an effort to get outside of that. And I've tried to do that by commenting on things or clicking on things that I wouldn't normally.
She does that by commenting on her right-wing Christian best friend's post.
Okay, listen, that was...
Just say it.
It made sense.
I'm really not a right-wing Christian, but next to Trisha, I am.
I guess so. A lot of people are next to me, right? Everything's relative.
It's all relative.
It's all relative. Yeah, and it's hard to, like, I find it hard to try, like, make the effort to overcome that algorithm by, like, delving into those kinds of posts and articles without getting caught in a comments war, because that's definitely the downside to social media, right? Is like getting into something with this total stranger. You're both behind your keyboards, and then, but you're like so emotionally invested in these like words that are typed on a screen.
And you react instead of like respond. Like I feel like I'm like reading it while driving down the road, which you should never do, of course.
Especially not in a 17 passenger van. Right? I mean, just hypothetically.
Hypothetically. I mean, it only has 11 seatbelts right now. Even if I'm just checking my Facebook in between homeschooling kiddos, I feel like this knee-jerk reaction to react rather than respond.
I do as well.
Or sometimes I do this thing where I like have a thought that I think's well thought out and I post it on my Facebook and then I get like sucked into a vortex and people are commenting away and then I don't come back to it for like a week because sometimes that's how long it takes me to get back to Facebook and then I look like a total jerk because I like started a firestorm and then left the building.
And then your friends are like, rah! And you're like, sorry guys.
Yeah.
I just had this thought and here it is and social media sucks.
Yeah. I'm a social media fan, I have to admit. I'm really drawn to watching other people's lives and keeping in touch with other people, watching, like, hearing other opinions.
It makes for reunion planning really easy.
Really does. I really, really like social media. I'm not going to lie. But I will say I finally had to start a secret Facebook group where I could really – I actually created my own echo chamber on purpose where I can just – I'm an external processor, so it occurred to me it's not really appropriate to externally process with the 2,000 Facebook friends that I don't all know in real life. And
depends on what you're processing, but it's probably a safe rule of thumb.
So I'm trying to do more of my external processing in secret.
But it's not really secret because there's like a couple hundred of us in that group, isn't there?
No, I have a secreter group.
I'm not in your secreter group?
You're not.
What?
Sorry. Because you're not my echo chamber.
I'm leaving. I got to get in my... Where's my car?
It's lost
in the dark. It's so dark. It's so dark out here.
And also, in all fairness, I think every person in my echo chamber are all adoptive parents.
Oh,
so the other thing that we should totally talk about is adoption. Adoptee perspectives. Because we're actually not opposites ideologically on this particular issue.
We are not. This is what a can of worms sounds like.
Maybe I'll cut this and turn it into a whole separate episode. Okay. We're both adopted from South Korea.
South Korea. Not the North one.
How many people have ever asked you that?
Many.
Is it just me?
Like a significant amount.
Doesn't that seem like an inappropriate or ignorant question?
I mean, to us, probably, but like, it might just be like a conversation starter, probably, because people know, I mean, at least people know they're...
I mean, now North Korea is in the news all the time.
Well, sure, no, but like back then.
Awful country. It hasn't always been that way, but I cannot tell you how many times people are like...
It's never been like a great country.
No, never. Which is why when people say, oh, you're adopted from Korea, North or South? You're like, people don't leave North Korea. Certainly not to be adopted by white.
Sure, but maybe they're curious about like, did you escape?
At 3 months old.
Are you a Lifetime original movie?
I was 3 months old and I just knew that I was born into this awful country. So I was out.
Congratulations.
And apparently I brought you with me.
Whee! 6 months later. I don't think, I mean, so I can only think of one time where someone was like, you're not from North Korea, are you? And he was an old man and he was visibly intoxicated, although I didn't know that at the time because I was only 16, but it was the middle of the night at Shock Trauma and he had just like stabbed himself with a knife or something. So.
That, I'm not sure that counts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but he asked. I was like, no, South Korea, you need to go to sleep now. So. Yeah.
So anyway, I think I would say, based on the interactions I've had with other adult adoptees, and I live and breathe in the adoptive world more than you do because I definitely now have adopted kiddos, I would say we would put ourselves in the category of, like, content, happy adoptees. Yeah. As opposed to the, like, large, loud population of angry adoptees, as it were.
I would almost say, like, and the Hollywood vision of adoptees a little bit, too, right? Maybe?
I don't know.
I haven't watched This Is Us yet, so I don't even know.
Oh, you're talking about This Is Us?
I don't know. I mean, yeah. I'm talking about in general because I haven't seen it yet.
You're going to have to watch it and come back.
Okay. We'll have a This Is Us podcast.
We should.
All right.
Yeah.
How much do I have to watch?
I mean, it's only like, it's just starting the second season, so you don't have to binge watch one season.
Oh, God, that's going to take me a year.
After Annie.
All right. After the show.
That's the other thing that makes us really different is Trisha is a gorgeous voice and she's a brilliant singer and I'm totally tone deaf.
I'm shaking my head. I think I like smile at auditions and they're like, well, at least she's not annoying, so we might as well let her be in the show.
Okay, guys, this is how we used to get mixed ups now that we're speaking on the whole show thing. Trisha was always in our musicals and our plays. I'm thinking musicals.
Mm-hmm.
And she sings and people would see her on stage singing. And then for the next week, I would spend all of my time accepting congratulations for a job well done while walking through our high school. Great job in Fiddler on the Roof.
Wait, how come no one ever told me great job?
Because they thought they were congratulating you through me. By the way, they think you're awesome.
Oh, thanks. I'm so glad I know that 20 years later.
Anyway. So we're happy adoptees.
We are. We're content. This summer I made a joke to some friends who went to Korea to adopt their son, went to Seoul, where I was adopted from. And they were talking to me about their, you know, their journey there and adopting him. And I made the offhanded joke. I was like, oh, did you see my mom while you were there? And they thought that was hilarious. Like but they were also very taken aback by it that I would like
joke about that.
Whereas for me, every life is a joke.
I know. So, okay, so I had some interesting thoughts about this weekend because I had to drive to Philly for Ninja Warrior competition.
Of course you did.
That's a whole other issue. Why do we only let 10-year-olds get one try through the course and then they're out? Because, I mean, I really love paying the competition fee and then driving 2 hours to wait an hour and a half to watch my kid compete and then he gets out on the third obstacle. And then I'm like, well, that was fun. I mean, I'm really glad that you're not crying and you took it really well. Let's go home. Okay.
You could enroll him in soccer instead.
We did that once and everyone agrees that we're not going to repeat that.
So those are your options.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so I was
back driving to the hour and a half wait then.
Yeah. So, I mean, so I had to drive to Philly and back. So I listened to a lot of podcasts. And so again, I was listening to Invisibilia and I was listening to an old, old episode. It was called How to Become Batman or something of the sort.
I should show that to Noah.
Except it really had nothing to do with Batman, so don't. And it's a podcast, so you can't show it. You'd have to have him listen.
Well, that's what Matt says that all the time when he and Christian say that with, like, when they hear a song, they're like, oh, I have to show Christian that song. That's how they say it. So now that's how I say it now. Anyway.
So they were talking about the blind guy who can ride a bike. His name's Daniel. Apparently this has been old news story because my husband, when I told him, he was like, oh yeah, the blind guy who rides a bike. But anyway, part of the point of the story was that his parents always treated him like a sighted child. Like they always expected that he could do everything that a sighted child could do, that he would just have to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So like they weren't like, oh, don't, like, let me hold your hand so you don't bump into things. Like they just let him wander around the world and figure things out and they expected him to be functional.
Mm-hmm.
And so he learned how to echolocate using his tongue. He clicks. and he is fully functioning in the world and can see basically through these clicking sounds. And they interviewed people who have been sighted and become blind who learn this echolocation technique. Mm-hmm. And so that they, because they know the difference between like seeing images created by your eyes and seeing images created right. by echolocation. Right. And they say that the images that they are able to create about their surroundings by echolocation are visual images. Like they're comparable to the images that their eyes saw just without as much detail and without the color.
That's crazy.
And so it's this whole idea. One, there's a whole like brain thing going on there about, you know, really what we're seeing is really just a creation of our brains anyway mm-hmm. through our senses. So right. whether we have all of our senses or not.
We learned that watching The Matrix. Keep going.
I know. Right. But
thanks, Keanu.
Bigger different. The bigger takeaway is expectations and how that shapes your reality. So Daniel talks about a boy that he met in his class who was blind but treated like a blind person and mm-hmm. how it was super unnerving to him because he was really made uncomfortable by the insecurity of the child who was blind but told that he was disabled because he was blind mm-hmm. versus Daniel who knew he was blind but just thought he saw differently than everyone else. Mm-hmm. So long story around to the back to this whole adoption and racism. Hello, can of worms.
You get a can of worms. And you get a can of worms.
Cans of okay, worms for going. Everyone.
Yay.
But this idea of, and let me preface this by saying, I think racism is a very real issue in our country. So I'm just going to say that. I'm not using my whole expectation analogy to explain away all things. But you and I have been victims, if we will, experiencers of racism. We've never talked a huge ton about this, but I know I have. I have these crazy stories that are clearly just like ridiculous illustrations of people's ignorant prejudices and
preconceived notions
and all of these things. Mm-hmm. Not damaging directly in and of themselves, but part of a bigger picture, for sure.
Okay.
I'll just give an example. So, let's see. Okay, so I went to a school that had a dining hall where there was a stir-fry station.
I love where this is going.
I mean, I don't even know if it was called the stir-fry station, but it was basically, it was like an omelet station.
It was probably called the Oriental station.
Right. It may have even been called an omelet station, but I liked to stir fry at the little cassette burners with the little cute single serving size pans and this whole array of fresh foods to eat, which really, if you're going to eat at a college dining hall, that's where you need to eat every day.
And they're already pre-chopped. It's so convenient.
So convenient.
And then they have a little bit of cornstarch. So when you need to thicken the sauce at the end, it's yeah. great.
So anyway, so I'm making.
My school had one too.
I'm making something. I'm standing making something. I may have even been making an omelet for all I know. And some large
college. You were making waffles.
I know. That was the waffle station. Some college jock. I'm going to be totally prejudiced and judgmental here as well.
Do they have jocks at UMBC?
No. Okay. So some
college. Some college chess player.
Some large college male came up to me and was like.
Seriously? You're going to brag on me like that?
Came up to me and was like. Hey, man, can you teach me how to stir fry? And I was like, I like cocked my head and I was like, he was like, you're Asian, right? Like, so you know how to do this.
Mm. So before you said that, I could have been like, well, if you were like actually stir frying and what you were making looked delicious, which I'm sure it was because you're a great cook, maybe he just like saw you as someone who could cook and who could hopefully teach it. But then you said the rest of your story and I was like,
yeah, no. Or the person who came up to me randomly in a bagel shop and asked if I read any Mandarin and could he practice on me. Mm. And I'm so dense that I thought Mandarin was an author and I spent like a whole hot 10 seconds flipping through my Rolodex of like classic British lit authors and thinking Mandarin, Twain. I've read Twain, have never read any Mandarin. And I said that to him. I don't know Mandarin. I don't think I've ever read him before. And then he was looked like, at me.
I've encountered the only dumb Asian there is.
Yeah. And he looked at me.
I found her.
And in that split second, as I opened my mouth to say that sentence, it occurred to me, oh, he thinks I'm Chinese.
Oh, right. That, were you like, no, I only speak Cantonese.
I'm sure it was something just that.
Genius.
Genius. No, it certainly
diabolical.
Wasn't.
Diabolical.
But you just touched on another one. All Asians are smart.
Fair enough. I mean, we are. Sorry, that's not fair. We have that conversation a lot.
Which conversation? About how smart we are?
Well, about how... You're going to have to delete this one. This is going to go in the blooper reel.
All that to say, I know of people who have had those experiences and it's really shaken their identity and or really offended them.
Do you know Asian people who have had those experiences with Asian stereotypes or people of other races, colors, ethnicities whose stereotypes and assumptions maybe aren't quite as either benign or complimentary? Sometimes all Asians are smart. Or they can cook, or, you know.
Good question.
Right? Because as an Asian woman, the prejudices that exist, there's a privilege associated with being the Asian woman minority.
If you like being a sex object.
Sure, but like that's not going to get you shot in the side of the road.
But it might get you trafficked.
Probably not, because you're not homeless and vulnerable.
But I could have been trafficked when I was 12.
You were not homeless and vulnerable when you were 12 either. I knew you then.
But anyway, to answer your question, yes. Mostly Asians adopted to the Midwest where they were the only person of color in their town, geographic area.
School. Yeah. Well, so we're just lining up the cans of worms.
Well, all that to say, like, so another example that would apply to that situation as well, like the Midwest, the stories of other adult adoptees from Korea adopted to places less diverse than Baltimore are, you know, comments about your eyes, which we were not inoculated from here.
No, I experienced comments about our eyes. I'm sure that you did too.
In fact, one of my best friends in elementary school told me later that when she first met me in kindergarten, all she wanted to do was stick her tongue out at me because of my eyes. And she wanted to give me like the Chinese, like squinty eye face.
I remember having boys, more than one, like make those eyes.
Right. And on the playground, like the Chinese, Japanese, right. Something. I can't even remember.
Dirty
the whole
knees.
Thing.
Look yeah, at these, yeah. Something that like one. That. Yeah.
So I feel like if I had been set up, if the foundation had been laid that I was going to walk through the world and experience these things and that all these people were rude and that these were like horrible things to be said, I could have felt bullied like my entire existence, really. Like I remember in elementary school all those things happening, but just kind of like brushing them off. And then as I got older and I started to understand more and then the things got more ridiculous, like the Mandarin and the bagel shop, then it became like good fodder for good stories and it was humorous.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes full circle onto the expectations. There was never an expectation that I should be offended by comments that happened around my race.
Growing up in a liberal household and like with a social worker as a mom, like I feel like I was aware of how wrong and how inappropriate those comments and those, you know, those things were. But I think that I was fortunate enough to have the support of my family and friends. Looking back, probably, I'm sure part of that was having friends that looked like me too, you and Rosalind, and, you know, just having that base of support that, like, I'm not that different, or everyone's different from each other, like, everyone's always going to find something to tease someone about, and for me it just happens to be, you know, my eyes or whatever, but if it wasn't that, it would be something else.
We did tease kids for things that were definitely not race-related.
Absolutely. Kids tease kids about literally everything.
Right. So there's this constant, because now I'm an adoptive parent, this war between like when I talk to other adoptive parents about being a transracial adoptee, I walk this fine line between having them have open conversations with their kids, but also not creating a victim mentality as an expectation, because I feel like that sets people up, kids up, to then be offended by things that happen to them.
So I definitely understand you know, what you mean, but I think that that could easily happen and does every day outside of transracial adoption. Like, it, you set your kid up to be offended by, you know, kids say lots of things that are offensive to lots of people, no matter what their color or religion or, right? So,
right. So, I mean, it doesn't just apply to...
It doesn't just apply to race. It doesn't just apply to disability. It doesn't just apply to, I don't know, any number of, like, anything that kids give other kids a hard time about, which is literally everything.
Right. I just feel like the adoptive community as a whole, maybe because of angry adoptees, is ultra sensitive to creating this very... It's a very intentional environment that they're trying to create for their kids about how they're going through life, because they don't want to end up with angry adoptees. So I feel like the conversation that parents are having together in the adoptive parent world are maybe more intensely revolving around how do we have our kids navigate what they're going to go through, because there's this expectation that they're going to have to navigate an extra level of crap that other kids aren't going through. Because, like you said, like, we're not immune. All kids are going to be picked on. Like, kids that aren't adoptees are obviously bullied. I get that, all that stuff. But I feel like there's this, like, we've created, and maybe it's just because I swim around in the adoption fishbowl a lot. So maybe it's happening in other parent circles and I'm just not privy to it. That there's this expectation that on top of all the things that are already hard about being a kid, then there's this, like, extra layer about, like, you don't look like your mom, or who's your real mom, or bring a baby mm-hmm. picture to school and you don't have a baby picture, mm-hmm. or you might be made fun of because of your...
Do your family tree. Which one? Right.
Right. Yeah.
So, okay. So I think it's interesting you say that, and here's my response to that. I think that that is, that touches on... If you're talking about, I'm assuming the fishbowl you're talking about is white parents adopting non-white kids in general. Is that kind
majority,
of
majority? Yeah,
majority, right? So I think that that gets into a little bit of white parents trying to understand experiences that their non-white children may have that as white people they have never experienced, and just trying to reach outside of their own
paradigm,
right? To try and understand and then support and then parent, you know, on top of that. It's not even trying to understand, like, you know, what my black neighbor has experienced that I haven't. It's now you have to parent that. So I think that that's important. Now, obviously, how it's set up, the level of sensitivity and how you react to it and what you do about it and, you know, are all, there's a wide spectrum of things you can do that help and things you can do that don't, and all that space in between, right? Things with great intentions that don't help and things that, you know, just happen to help by accident. But I do think that there is a very real space of experiences outside of being white that transracial adoptees will be exposed to, and that's important to be acknowledged by the white community, not only as transracial adoptees, but just as people of color in general. And then, you know, if you break down by ethnicity, obviously things change. Again, I think as Asian, East Asian women, we have a privilege that other minorities do not.
Yeah, I would agree with, I would agree with that.
But I agree with you. I think that you can definitely set kids up for failure, for sure. But I don't think that there's value in this, like, colorblind philosophy of we just see everyone as the same, so everyone's the same, so we're going to treat everyone the same. I think that it's important to acknowledge that people that are different from your experience have, you know, are exposed to different things than you.
Right. Like, Asians have problems with eyeglasses, even if we all see each other as the same color.
First of all, we're not the same color. I'm way tanner than you.
Yeah. But eyeglasses is a good example of that. Like, we have to recognize that Asian faces wear eyeglasses different than Caucasian faces.
Because I don't have a bridge to my nose.
We don't have noses.
Right. We have noses. We just don't have bridges. We don't have noses. We're not Voldemort.
But see, like, okay, so here's a great example. So I could look at eyeglasses in general and think, they weren't created with me in mind. Maybe I should be a contact wearer. Isn't it great that we live in a world where there's contacts? Or I could think, see, the world hates Asians. Like, eyeglasses were made for white people. No one wanted Asians to see.
Okay, but like so many Asians wear eyeglasses. I feel like that's a bad example.
But Asians might be angry about the eyeglasses inventor that they were racist, and they're just not talking about it.
But there's lots of eyeglasses that fit Asian. You just have to get the ugly ones.
I always had trouble with glasses. Every kind.
I know. Me too.
But you're wearing them.
Right. And they always slide down my nose.
I always had...
My nose, which I have, because I'm not Voldemort. Keep going.
Eyeglasses was my migraine trigger when I was a kid, because I spent the entire time scrunching my face up to keep my glasses on my face.
Okay, well, you need to see a different optometrist then. Ophthalmologist? Optometrist.
The good news is the last time I went to one, they told me I had 20/20 vision. I don't wear glasses anymore.
That's great. I'm like this close to being legally blind.
That's why you couldn't find my house.
That probably, it was so dark.
Gosh, I had another thought before we got distracted about the eyeglasses. Oh my. I know what I was going to say. So I want to interject that I also think one thing that is not talked about enough in all of these conversations is that individuals are individuals and they have different personalities, and that influences how we perceive things. Mm-hmm. Because.
Duh.
Well, I know that seems so...
And this section of the podcast will be called Captain Obvious.
I know. I know it seems so obvious, but we tend to cast such blanket statements about adoptees need to know X, Y, or Z. Or adoptees need to hear X, Y, and Z.
Sure, of course. And I think there's always the caveat. I mean, with any parenting advice, right, I would hope... That there's always the caveat, you know your child best, you know whoever you're applying, whatever relationship you're applying this to, you know them best, and so, like, just don't be a dick, and...
But right? See, herein lies the tricky part, is that angry adoptees have made all adoptive parents feel like such dicks that they are walking on eggshells trying to get everything right, and in doing so, have not given themselves permission to follow their child's lead as an individual.
I think that's a blanket statement. Maybe. In your fishbowl, perhaps?
Perhaps. I just interact with a lot of adoptive parents, and I feel like I spend a lot of time telling them, it's okay.
That's gotta be...
Follow your child's lead. You don't have to, when they're two, start talking to them about how to handle the racism they're going to experience in their lives. Mm-hmm. Like... They may be really resilient kids who walk through it and shake it off or see it as a joke, or it doesn't, like, hurt their soul mm-hmm. to the core. But if you talk about it ad nauseum because you're afraid it might, then they might start thinking that. Versus, like, I'm not going to say that we all have the capability to live up to the expectation that we can just joke about the ignorant guy in the bagel shop, or the drunk guy at Shock Trauma.
Or seeing my birth mom in Korea.
Or seeing your birth mom in Korea. Or joking about being Twinkies.
It's so true, though.
It is. Sometimes it is just what it is. But I know people that would, like, probably alienate me as a friend because I'm willing to make that joke.
I mean, it's not a nice joke.
I don't know. I feel like it's not nice coming from certain people. Is it kind of like how black people have given themselves now to use the N-word, but no one else can?
But like, no, that's
we
not.
Can, we
no,
can use Twinkies.
Thing. It's but not no the same one else thing. Can. Nope. Not the same thing.
Okay.
Nope. For me, anyway, I don't experience your experiences, but I would. I had a very visceral reaction to that. That it's not the same okay. thing.
See, I think I've been desensitized because I lived with a 6'3" black kid who used that word like it was
Right. Well, the history of that word versus the history of a Twinkie,
I get it.
Carries a lot more weight.
I know. Like I said, I've been desensitized. Everyone else has a knee-jerk reaction to that word, and I'm like, oh, that's what...
Well, I, you know, and I don't mean to have like a, you know, but...
Fair enough. I get it.
And it's not that word in general. I think it's that...
History.
That history. More of the history than the word itself, yeah. If that makes sense.
No. So. All that to say, because... Well, I'm saying, so the individual thing comes also because both of us have adoptive siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that my adoptive siblings have experienced and filtered and processed their stories and their adoptions and their experience as a transracial adoptee very differently than me. Mm-hmm. And we were raised by the same family, same expectations, mm-hmm. same types of conversations, same senses of humor, all that stuff. And so still three different points of a triangle, all three of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, any family of three kids, right? Because my brother's adopted, also adopted from Korea, but then my sister is biological from my parents. And we're still three super, I think it's safe to say, as different as three people can be, so are we.
Yeah.
So
the individual part is, I think, under...
Paramount.
Well, and under acknowledged in the adoption world, in the fishbowl in which I swim.
I would venture to say that that is under... What word did you just use? What did you just say?
I don't remember.
Oh my God, it was literally 10 seconds ago.
No more wine for you.
Is... It's so delicious. That the individual, capital T, capital I, the individual is undervalued in every aspect of humanity, really. I mean, in policy, in social media, in, you know, even sometimes in relationships, in, you know.
Well, it's kind of hard to look at individuals in policy, in all fairness to the politicians.
Sure, no, definitely. It absolutely is. But yeah,
and all
is.
The other things.
Because, but, you know, like how you're going to write policy for a million individuals, right?
Exactly.
Right.
I can't even write policy for, like, the three kids in my family.
I can't, right. I can't even, like, figure out what I want, let alone, right, yeah. So, yes, understandably, yes, extraordinarily
but anyway,
difficult.
But I get what you're saying. It should be way more valued in all the other things, really.
Yeah, especially human, I mean... Just in general, in human interaction in general, especially in this digital age, and particularly in this highly politicized environment that kind of we're living in right now, where, you know, we talk about this divisive atmosphere, and there's certainly, going back to what you said, like not trusting someone just because you don't like them, you know, not trusting someone just because of their political party affiliation or their who they voted for or... You know, that goes both ways, certainly, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, but if you strip that away and then start thinking about the individuals behind that party affiliation, behind that ballot, behind that meme they posted or whatever, you know, it's always deeper than we first assume.
Right. There's always a story.
Right.
We've come full circle.
Yes.
We win.
We win. We always win.
We do, except when we're trying to get to San Francisco.
We got there eventually, and then later my bag showed up, and then later we missed the ferry.
It was literally the coldest, rainiest weekend on record in San Francisco ever.
Later we almost missed the other ferry. We should really condense it. We should, like, have a topic, I think, for our podcast. Like, we need to just,
well, this
like,
was kind of like the intro, meet the person who's going to refrain on the podcast. We should be more, we'll be more topic specific from here on out. But it's kind of hard to land on a topic when you haven't seen each other for a long time.
I know. I was afraid you were going to like dive right in with Colin Kaepernick. I was going to be like, let's talk about the NFL. No, we don't have to do that.
No. And the other, I thought about that and I thought it's timely now, but this isn't going to publish for another like 6 weeks and it might be old news by then. I mean, not that the point of the whole thing is old news.
Oh, it's old news, but won't like, be. People, it won't dominate the news cycle like it is right
yeah,
now.
And people would be like, "What? What happened? How many weeks ago was that? What,
I know.
Can you
well,
remind
I feel
me
like
about
every
the
week
NFL?
It's like a new,
like
crazy
happened?
Thing, yeah. Right?
So I'm a little too far behind to make that like the podcast for this week.
Yeah, I don't think that plus you're going to have to edit a lot of this.
But there's a lot of topics we could cover.
Yeah.
That we've covered before, but are worth discussing in front of an audience.
Well, and I think the remarkable thing about it is that we're like the middle of our echo chambers. We're like the middle of that Venn diagram, right? We're like that sliver that of here's, you know, my like extremely lefty, liberal, hippie, bleeding heart Venn, you know, circle. And here's your conservative Christian.
Do I get a bleeding heart too?
Yeah, you get a bleeding heart too. Those are beautiful flowers, by the way. I want one. Anyway. And I feel like the intersection for that is getting, that sliver is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. But I don't think that benefits anyone.
Right.
A small slivers benefit no one. That could be the title. Everyone would get it.
Wow, that's a huge allegory right there.
Okay.
Maybe not allegory. Analogy?
I don't know.
I think allegory has to do with God.
I'm not sure. What? Wine. This is so good. Ménage à trois California red wine. It's delicious.
Yeah. And we're going to pop open a bottle every time we get together to record a podcast.
I agree. I concur.
I was going to have every guest do that, but not all the guests that I have had or will have, I think, will want to do that with me. And it's awkward.
Are as fun as me?
Well, it's awkward to pop a bottle of wine over a phone. It's not as much fun to drink like over the phone with a person. But yeah, okay, so in closing, I'm not one of those cool podcast hosts that has like questions that I ask every person at the end. So
here are your questions.
Here is your question. Questions, like I can come up with more than one. Here's your closing question. What are the things you regularly do besides hanging out with me that get you outside of your echo chamber?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, honestly, most of it happens on social media, which I'm like embarrassed to say.
Hashtag fail.
Fail. But then in person too, I mean, so in general, like my echo chambers, I have several echo chambers where like, and one of them certainly is geographical just because I have three young kids and I'm busy with their things. And like, so I, and just kind of stuck in those circles, right? But I really try and make it a point to connect with people who I know, who we wouldn't maybe like naturally find everything to talk about all the same all the time, you know? And sometimes, and I'm working on this in real life. I'm still wary of doing it on social media to get enter into those comment wars. But in real life, I'm really trying to make it a point to, when I hear something or see something, especially if it's with someone I know, that if I can give constructive feedback on it, certainly not, I'm not trying to hurt anyone's feelings or like, you know, kind of if you see something, say something, and kind of not standing idly by.
Just don't say it in the comments. Like at least private message the person.
Got a lot of likes. Beth said it was fine.
Thought you didn't want to get in a comment war.
So I gave it like 3 days, didn't I?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, never mind. I just did it tonight.
Oh.
Before I came here.
On a post that we know, on like a person that we mutually know together?
Yeah, like you.
Oh, on me?
On your post.
Oh, on my post?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'll check that out.
Good. But to try and engage in a dialogue, engage in a respectful, first and foremost, utmost respectful dialogue, to listen. I really am trying. I'm really good at talking. I'm not as good at listening.
Which is why we're podcasting where no one's talking back.
Right. But we're podcasting together. We're listening to each other.
That's true.
I'm really trying to listen to stories, to other people's stories, and just to, if I say something and someone says something back, to really try and understand instead of just, you know, knee-jerking like, oh, they're so wrong and I'm so right, to really stop and think and try and listen to people and not just hear them.
Well, that's good. That's good parenting advice too.
Yeah, I don't do that to my kids. I'm not there yet. Mostly I just yell at them, be quiet. Yeah, I guess that's trying.
That's good. I like it. I approve.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Phew. If that matters.
Right.
Well, that's a wrap for our first in-person recording. Sorry for the lack of actual closure on the conversation where I thanked the person and all that. I asked Trish who she would nominate to be on the show, which I ask everyone off-air, but then forgot to come back to close the show out. That's what I get for podcasting with wine past my bedtime. Anyway, I hope you found value in something we touched on, and we'd love your feedback. Specifically, we'd love to know what topics you'd like to hear us tackle, from our different viewpoints, in a way where we're still besties at the end of the conversation, even if we walk away disagreeing. I know I keep saying I don't get Twitter, but I am on just enough so folks can reach me there. I'm also a huge Instagram fan. I'm at M.A. Corkum on both. When leaving comments and feedback, you can also use the hashtag TheUncorkedPodcast. Thanks for joining us and have a great week.